It's the last regular season edition of the Horsin' Around podcast, week 17, bringing the 2017 season and the 2017 calendar year to a close. And for the Broncos, let's face it, you really just want to turn the page on 2017, move on to 2018. I think we all do. Get going to the offseason, but got to get through one more game, and it'll be an interesting game in the long-term look of things because of how things have developed this week, what the quarterback matchup is going to be, even though the result of this game really doesn't have much impact on the standings. The Chiefs are locked in to their playoff seeding. The Broncos will be in third place or fourth place, so there's some impact on the schedule for next year, but not much. But you still got to play the game. Still some interesting storylines. And later on in this podcast, we'll hear from Clark Judge of Talk of Fame Network, also a Hall of Fame voter, looking ahead to the Broncos offseason, but also talking about Hall of Fame stuff in regards to Steve Atwater and Pat Bowlen. So there's a lot to talk about, even though the game maybe isn't the most compelling. I'm Andrew Mason of DenverBroncos.com and Orange and Blue 760, joined this week by Ryan Edwards, my co-host of First and 10 at 10 on Orange and Blue 760. Also, was doing a lot of morning shifts this week on the Plumbus and Lindahl show. I sat in with him for a couple of days. He took care of the entire week on Plumbus and Lindahl, so he's been talking a lot, and so I appreciate you talking for 15 more minutes.
You got it, man.
With me, man. Appreciate it.
You know, thanks. I got your back.
Hey, it worked so well last time. Let's do this again.
Let's do it again.
Yeah. So, interesting game.
Yeah.
Paxton Lynch starting for the Broncos. It's his fourth career start. Patrick Mahomes starting for the Chiefs. It is his first career start. They're going to rest Alex Smith. They're going to rest a host of players. It will look different than the Chiefs team that you've seen throughout the year. Of course, as we discussed on the Thursday edition of First and 10 at 10, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a bad Chiefs team because they rested a bunch of starters in a similar situation back in 2013 and took a playoff-bound Chargers team to overtime before falling. So just because this Kansas City team is going to be without a bunch of players doesn't mean that they're not going to go out and play competitively and put on a good show and a challenging game for the Broncos.
Yeah, Andy Reid's going to have these guys ready to play. There's no question about that. And, you know, there's a lot on the line for some of these guys looking for bigger roles possibly next year, specifically Patrick Mahomes. And not an off season where the Chiefs are projected, to be over the cap. And you're going to have to make some difficult decisions there. They're going to probably consider whether or not Alex Smith is worth that $17 million that they're expected to pay him next year. I think he is in this league. But when you're the Kansas City Chiefs who just traded up a bunch of draft stock to get Patrick Mahomes, I don't know if he has to light it up necessarily against the Broncos on Sunday, but I'll say that what Patrick Mahomes does in this game and what he's done in the preseason makes me believe that he's going to play pretty efficiently, and I think with the system that they have in place, what Andy Reid has put together, I expect a good game from him. I don't know if you'll expect an outstanding game, but I think a good game. I think it's going to give them enough, and this is my opinion. I think it's going to give them enough to say, Patrick Mahomes is our future quarterback, and we're going to move on from Alex Smith. Now they're going to try to trade Alex Smith, of course. I think that's the route you go first, and the league will probably not buckle to that because they're going to know that, hey, if we can't trade him, they're going to release him. There's no reason to give anything to the Kansas City Chiefs unless we have to. Patrick Mahomes, for me, right now, without seeing him play this final game, is probably a good shot, if not better than 50-50, to be the starting quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs next year.
And in terms of the Chiefs planning their offseason, remember, to get Mahomes, part of the deal was trading their first-round pick in 2018.
That's correct.
So when they're looking at their roster and ways to improve it, they don't have that first-round pick to work with. So they're over the cap for next year, according to overthecap.com, appropriately enough.
The only thing that can really change...
And they don't have the first-round pick.
Exactly. The only thing that can really change is if the Chiefs go on a run in the postseason. Like, if Alex Smith and the Chiefs go on a run, they make it to the AFC Championship game, and maybe even further, that could change everything.
And then you probably say, okay, we got to stand pat here.
Yes.
Because we're close.
Yes, we're really close.
And that could happen.
But that's the only thing in my mind that changes what they're going to do there, because they have to make some there's other ways. There's obviously other ways you can do it, but that seems to be the most glaring. The investment is too much, and at this point, he's sat for a whole year with the exception of the Sunday game against the Broncos. It seems like it's time to at least go that direction. Like I said, it's the only thing in the postseason could be a wild card here.
Yeah, and it will be fascinating to watch. Alex Smith had a great start. The team and him kind of slumped at midseason, and then he really has been roaring the last few weeks.
Yep.
Has a lot of momentum going into the postseason. The stat has been disseminated. 4,000-yard passer, 1,000-yard tight end in Travis Kelce, 1,000-yard rusher in Kareem Hunt, 1,000-yard receiver in Tyreek Hill. First time that a team has had that combination since, I believe, the 1981 Chargers.
Doesn't really sound like a game manager, does it? Doesn't really sound like a game managing offense at all. as much as everybody says, well, the Chiefs, well, you know, the Chiefs are like what the Broncos probably wanted to be in some respects. You know, you wanted to have an offense that could do its job.
Pick your poison, though.
Yes.
You can't focus on one guy. And if
Right. You
do, they'll beat you with somebody else. Because go think of the Broncos game in Kansas City. Now, Denver contained Kansas City's offense for the most part.
Especially Kareem Hunt.
But Travis Kelce caused just enough damage.
As he always tends to do. Boy, and that is, as we move to the offseason and start talking about the Broncos in the offseason, that becomes a priority as well. We're going to spend a ton of time on the quarterbacks. Naturally, it kind of has to be. But a tight end that can be a matchup problem for opposing teams, for every opposing team, it changes the dynamic of your offense.
Maybe multiple tight ends, because you're hoping that Jake
White
can be that guy. But you're looking at the draft, and there are some interesting names starting to pop up in there that can help you. A guy like Hayden Hurst out of South Carolina is an outstanding receiving tight end who may drop to the second round of the draft because of his age. He's going to be 25 years old. It's part of the reason why he's turning pro with a year of eligibility left, but he's an outstanding receiving tight end. Troy Fumagalli out of Wisconsin sort of fits that Jake Butt tight end mold of a guy who can block as well as run very precise routes. You know, you've got a guy Conklin out of Central Michigan who's going to be at the Senior Bowl. There's some names that are starting to pop up. I don't think this is the 2017 tight end class in terms of quality, but there are guys there. Jimmy Graham's going to be a free agent. So there are going to be some possibilities if you're going to look to bolster that room. And, of course, Austin Traylor has done some nice things, especially as a blocker in recent weeks. And even Jeff Heirman has made some plays the last few weeks. So there are some internal options as well, but you've got to get more from the position on offense. And then defensively, you know, the Broncos, I think, have given up 9 touchdowns to tight ends this year. That's something that Denver's going to have to shore up their coverage of tight ends for the 2018 season.
Now, you're looking at that tight end group that you just sort of listed out there for the Broncos, and I'd like to see a concerted effort to get them involved in the game plan. You know, when you have guys like Travis Kelce and Jimmy Graham and Rob Gronkowski, they're part of the game plan. I mean, you're going to find ways to get them the ball. You game plan to add them. Teams are game planning to stop them. And yet, they still find ways to affect the game. That's something that the Broncos haven't had since Julius Thomas. I mean, not really. And you think about the red zone efficiency. What could change for the Broncos to have that position? I mean, I'm also going to include, you know, what you want to eventually have is a legit slot receiver. You want to have a legit quick guy that can get you 5 to 6 yards when you need it. The Broncos are a team that had struggled significantly in third and long this year, and you got to make that another game plan, another part of the plan for the offseason. The plan for next season is to be in third and manageable consistently. Because, again, we don't know what this offense is going to look like. We still don't know what the quarterback's going to look like either.
Yeah, and that's third and manageable. The running game helps. And that has improved in the last few weeks as the running game has gotten better.
It's been a commitment to it.
Yeah, they've committed more to it. The offensive line has done better, particularly the interior of the offensive line. Ron Leary had a good season before he got injured, but you've learned some good things about Max Garcia and Connor McGovern. Max Garcia in particular has played the best ball of his career, I think, in the last several weeks.
Became the full-time guy.
Mm-hmm.
They opted eventually. You know, they went with that part-time share with Alan Barber and Max Garcia. Barber eventually became a tackle
right
when they had injuries out there at right tackle. actually he was even a tackle for a moment, a left tackle. But when they made the move to have Max Garcia the full-time starter, it seemed to flip a switch for him. And there is an optimism there. To the point that as it was something I would consider a priority before the last few weeks, I've moved it down my list. I've moved that guard position further down my list of priorities now, and that's a great thing. That is an extremely important thing, and not to mention the fact that I think Connor McGovern is showing enough to continue to be a really good depth piece for you.
That's one need I've kind of crossed off my list.
Yeah.
For the offseason, yeah. is guard, because I feel good about Garcia, Leary, and McGovern as interior guys. And, of course, Matt Paradis, you know what he is. Now, he's a restricted free agent, and if you don't have a high enough tender on him, some teams could come knocking on him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one to watch there. In case if the tender isn't high enough, there could be some interest in a young, smart center. Now, of course, he had the hip surgeries earlier this year. Now, it'll be last year to you if you're listening to this after the new
That's
year.
That's right.
And you could be. But he had hip surgeries early in 2017. But, of course, he's been his usual durable self.
He hasn't
missed a snap. I mean, boy, oh, boy. Now hasn't missed a snap in nearly three seasons. Going back to when he came into the lineup to start the 2015 season against Baltimore, he has been the Iron Man.
He has been the Iron Man, and something that you can expect to see. That said, you know, I mean, it's good to know that Connor McGovern can fill in that role.
Mm-hmm.
He can fill in any of those roles, at guard or at center. And again, you're getting him these reps. Not that you wanted to see Ron Leary get hurt, but to get him these reps and simultaneously put Max Garcia in a full-time role, you're learning things about this offensive line that we didn't know coming into the season.
Yeah, and that's been huge. Look, it's a frustrating season, and we hear it from fans every day. We get that. I will say this. On the offensive line, you are much farther ahead of where you were at this point last year. You haven't solved every issue on the line, but you are much closer to having a very good offensive line. You are closer to where you want to be than you were at this point in 2016. So that is something that you can point to as a positive from this season. That you want to build the Great Wall of Denver. Well, you're closer to that point than you were. You're still a ways off. Guys have to develop.
You're literally maybe a tackle away.
Yeah.
The right tackle away. Right tackle or left tackle, but I'm just saying
Garrett Bowles has to keep developing. I mean, there have been some struggles. He's a rookie. You have to expect that. He's got to take the next steps in his development. But I think you've at least identified him as a starter.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And then right tackle, of course. Right tackle, you've gone through Menelik Watson, then he went to IR. Alan Barber played there, Donald Stevenson, and Cyrus Kwangjo, who had a series against Washington. And a really nice block on the inside on C.J. Anderson's first 21-yard run, and had the face mask grab. Should have been a 15-yard penalty there on top of that 21-yard gain. And Vance Joseph told us on first and 10 this week, probably going to play a little more on Sunday. That would be good to see.
Now, Cyrus Kwangjo always looked the part.
Yes.
Right? He always looked like the right kind of guy.
Passed the eye test from day one.
Absolutely. And it really has not translated. But I thought that was a really nice addition for the Broncos as far as a guy that they can keep an eye on. You know, they added J.J. Dealman as well. There's guys that they can keep an eye on into the offseason and maybe get longer looks at it, maybe even in this game a little bit. I'd like to see Cyrus Kwangjo out there at right tackle. Wouldn't even mind seeing Elijah Wilkinson either. You have those options. You want to continue to see those guys. That's something that's going to be fun to look at in this game coming up for the Broncos and Chiefs, to see how these teams are able to utilize some of their depth and get a longer look at these players.
Maybe see D'Angelo Henderson some more. Find out more about him.
Well, we keep hoping.
Predicated on how soon you can get C.J. Anderson his 1,000 yards.
Good point.
You want to get him the 54 yards, get him to 1,000. Another goal that's in play, a little farther away. CJ needs 54. Demaryius Thomas needs 108 receiving yards to get to 1,000 yards for the sixth consecutive season. Paxton Lynch has said, hey, I want to make sure he gets that. Referred to Demaryius Thomas as a big brother to him, mm-hmm. that he's helped him out, that he kind of, and he kind of wants to pay back Demaryius for the help that Demaryius has given him by helping him get to 1,000. Of course, the Chiefs are going to know that, so I'm sure they're going to cover Demaryius Thomas appropriately.
Yeah, but you take care of your guys.
Yes.
That's what's important here. You take care of your guys.
And Demaryius Thomas can make plays in traffic.
Of course he can.
Yeah.
And, you know, I made a reference on our show to Kobe Bryant. You know, you can have kind of a game where all of a sudden it becomes like, we got to get Kobe his touches, his looks. And, you know, that, you know, you're not going to push it to 200. You don't have to. 108 is more than capable of getting in this game.
If Demaryius Thomas is sitting, say, at 8 receptions after the third quarter, do you try to feed him the ball 5 more times to get him to 90?
I do.
I would, too.
And yeah, because
keep that streak alive as well.
Six straight years.
Yes.
Yes, 100%.
I would, too.
Yeah, there's no reason not to. You know, again, we talked about it a while back, talking about that Brandon Marshall game, you know, from, 9 years ago,
yes.
when he had 21 catches in a game versus the Colts. And that was what it felt like. That's what it felt like, and that's kind of what I'm hoping a little bit, is where it's like, you know what? That he's kind of like that. He's kind of like an unstoppable player when he gets going.
Yeah.
Just give him that opportunity.
Remember this. You cannot spell feed the beast without DT.
How long have you been sitting on that?
About 30 seconds.
Okay, all right. That was good. That was good. It felt more rehearsed than that, but that was good.
It just popped in my head because I started with, in my mind, feed DT, and I'm like, and then beast just... It came to me in a vision. I'm going to sound like a revival preacher here or something.
It was brilliant. I loved it.
Feed the beast. Feed DT. Make it happen. And I think it can happen. And especially if you have this game plan for Paxton Lynch, and if you kind of keep it at a level that allows him to get comfortable. Think back to the Chicago game in the preseason. It was not going well in the second quarter. He was under duress, under pressure, taking some hits. They got him into a groove in the third quarter with a lot of quick reads. You know, drop back, quick slant, boom. Move, you know, 6 yards, 7 yards, 8 yards, move the chains. Fairways and greens type passing stuff. Do that with Demaryius Thomas. That can get Paxton Lynch comfortable, get him into a groove, and also you can bit by bit get Demaryius Thomas the catches and the yards to get him to the standards that you'd like to see him reach. And I think this is part of what would make Sunday's game a success, because Demaryius Thomas, look, he's meant so much to this Broncos team mm-hmm. for so long. Some of this, I think, is about rewarding him.
Agreed.
Just like I think C.J. Anderson, getting him to the 1,000 yards, I think it's about rewarding him for his effort over the last 5 years. You think back to the stepping in from a backup role late in 2014, carrying the team down the stretch of that year and making it to the Pro Bowl. In the postseason in 2015, he carried that team through the playoffs.
He did.
Literally carrying guys on his back over the goal line
mm-hmm.
to clinch Super Bowl 50.
He's been a special player for the Broncos, especially late in seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm impressed. He made it through a whole season. It was something that he charged himself with. It was something that, you know, I think the fan base has been waiting to see C.J. Anderson make it through a whole season.
And he's playing stronger as the year's gone on. He's doing his best work right now.
As he typically does,
mm-hmm.
he does his best work as either a game wears on or as the season wears on. And so there's really no doubt in my mind that he makes the 1,000-yard mark. And once again, whatever happens after this season happens – but he's been a good running back for the Broncos either way.
Yeah, and he's top 10 all-time in rushing yards. So get him the 1,000 yards. It's kind of the one thing in his career that he doesn't yet have as far as the accomplishments in his 5 years as a Bronco. Would be great to see that. Would be great to see Demaryius Thomas get his 1,000 yards. Those are the things you're watching for on what looks like it's going to be a frigid afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I saw we were actually, as we're sitting here recording this, we have two televisions in the studio, and we'll see what the final forecast ends up being. But as we are recording this, the afternoon temperature is forecast to be 23 degrees.
Going to be chilly. Good football weather, though.
Bundle up, Denver.
Yes, no doubt about it.
What is it they said in Groundhog Day? Don't forget your booties because it's cold out there. Oh, gosh.
Exactly.
Oh, I've been waiting to drop that one for a while.
It's good
reference. Been kind of a warm, it's been kind of a warm season for home games.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've had more wild swings in weather in the past. But, yeah, no, we've had some pretty good luck. No question about it.
But it's going to be a cold day, so bundle up and join us at Sports Authority Field at Mile High. Or if you're not in Denver, join us on the broadcast. Ryan Edwards and I, we will be taking care of the first hour of the Broncos pregame show together. Ryan will have the second hour from 10 to 11 a.m. Mountain Time. This will be on the Broncos Radio Network on KOA in Denver. So be sure and join him for that hour. Join us for the first hour, 9 to 10 a.m. And before we go, we had a very special guest this week on First and 10 and at 10 with us, Clark Judge, longtime writer and broadcaster covering the NFL for the Talk of Fame Network. He's also a Hall of Fame voter, mm-hmm. and he's a member of the Contributors Committee. Of course, we've talked a lot about the Contributors Committee because Pat Bowlen's name comes up in that discussion year after year. So Clark Judge has been in that room with the discussion of people who are nominated out of that pool. There are two names that will be brought forth from the Contributors Committee next August for the 2019 class. Clark Judge expects that Pat Bowlen will be one of those two names. He talks about that. He talks about why he supports Steve Atwater's Hall of Fame candidacy. And he talks about what he thinks the Broncos might do at quarterback this coming off season. So give that a listen.
We're going to head out to the hotline and bring on Clark Judge, who, of course, has been around the NFL for a very, very long time. Find him on the Talk of Fame Network. He's also a Hall of Fame voter. Appreciate you giving us some time, man. How are you today?
Yeah, thanks, Clark.
I'm doing fine. It's cold here in the Northeast, but yeah, I bet it's cold out there. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Hey, doing awesome. Doing awesome.
Hey, Steve Atwater is a semifinalist. I'm sure you heard about it for the Hall of Fame. And, you know, we want to talk to you about a litany of things in the NFL. But first and foremost, you know, coming up here with the Hall of Fame vote and sort of, you know, where do you think Steve currently sits in your estimation on maybe becoming a finalist this season?
Hey, Ryan gets right to it, huh?
I don't mess around. I'm sorry. I know it's cold. We're cold. I don't want to waste your time.
Cut straight to the chase. I like it. I know where he sits with me. He is a finalist, and he should be. He was an all-decade safety first team. So was Leroy Butler. And the interesting thing about the semifinalists is that Leroy Butler, this is his first time as a semifinalist. Now, he's first team all-decade, and so is Steve. But you look at that list, you go, now tell me something. Of that first team all-decade defense from the 1990s, who is not in the Hall of Fame? Two guys. Leroy Butler and Steve Atwater. I mean, and we had Leroy Butler on our recent show with Steve Atwater, which aired last night. And it was funny, Steve. Leroy Butler said, Steve Atwater should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame on the basis of that Christian Okoye hit alone. he should be a finalist. I know with I do a show with Talk of Fame Network with Ron Borges and Rick Goslin. Ron with the Boston Herald and Rick with the Dallas Morning News. They are Hall of Fame voters. They believe he should be a finalist. I hope he gets in that room again. He was there 2 years ago. I was disappointed he wasn't last year. He should be there this year. But I will tell you, there's intense competition. Steve knows it. I mean, there's seven DBs among these semifinalists, and there are four safeties and there are three cornerbacks. And of those safeties, you got John Lynch, who's been a top 10 finalist, Brian Dawkins, who was in last year for the first time. He's a top 10 finalist in his first year. I think he's probably a favorite to make it to the Hall of Fame this year. So the competition's intense, but I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I voted for Steve Atwater for being a finalist.
There you go.
Appreciate you.
Hey, Clark, why do you think it's been so tough to get pure safeties into the Hall of Fame? Because, you know, Kenny Easley, he's the only pure safety to play since Ken Houston in, of course, because, you know, Ronnie Lott and Rod Woodson were also corners.
It's a good question. I don't know. You'd have to poll the other 47 guys. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe they just don't really understand the position. But, you know, we've got a guy like Paul Krause, all-time NFL interceptor leader. He had 81 interceptions. It took him forever to get in, and in 1998, he finally goes in. He was the last pure safety to go in. And you're right, the last pure safety to play was Ken Houston before Ken Easley. Was Ken Houston. He retired after the 1980 season. For whatever reason, there's a blind spot there. Unfortunately, there wasn't last year because Kenny Easley got in, but he got in as a senior candidate, not as a modern era candidate. And I think that thinking is going to change. It's simply going to have to change. I think a safety will go in this year. I think a safety is going to go in next year. We got Polamalu and Ed Reed coming up. We've got Atwater and Butler in the queue. I mean, at some point, this thing's got to break. I think it breaks this year with the modern era guys. I do think Dawkins would be one of them. That's my guess. Maybe it's Lynch, but I think it'll be Dawkins. I really hope that Steve and or Leroy Butler gets to that final 15 because we need to start looking at them. But, guys, honestly, there are other positions. Tight end's another one. That's not one that the Halls really looked on favorably, and I'm not talking about the Hall itself. I'm talking about voters. And the same thing with guards. I mean, we had Will Shields, who to me was bulletproof, and certainly Steve Atwater knows a lot about Will Shields because he played him twice a year. But, I mean, here's a guy, 14 years. He was 12 Pro Bowls, 7 All-Pros, and never missed a game all decade and never missed a game. It took us 4 years to get him in. I mean, I looked at his resume and went, what are we missing here? I mean, let's move forward. So I don't know the answer to it, but I think that blind spot, certainly with that position, is going to change simply because it has to with the quality of player that's coming up at the safety position.
Yeah, speaking of Will Shields, he and I exchanged helmets at the Pro Bowl 1 year. So I got his helmet, got all the Chiefs guys to autograph it, and I did the same thing. He did the same thing with me. But, hey Clark, I wanted to ask you, now, what do Hall of Fame voters look for guys at the safety position? I mean, what are they judging the safety position off of? Is it interceptions, tackles?
No.
You know, how do they go about that?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. Again, it's probably individual, but I think it's impact to me. I look at the impact of that player on the game and on the games itself. I certainly know of your impact, Steve, because I was covering the Chargers when you were playing. So I saw you twice a year, and I knew what you were doing there. And to me, there's certain guys that you sort of say you've got to look out for. And I knew when San Diego was playing, I really felt like Junior Seau was one of those guys. And honestly, I thought Leslie O'Neal was too. And yet Leslie O'Neal's got no love from the Hall of Fame.
Unreal.
Until this year. And he finally made it. Yeah, he finally made the semifinals. You go, what were they missing? But to me, when I look at them, I mean, you look at the Baltimore Ravens, and Tom Brady always has had trouble with the Ravens, and there's a reason. It was Ed Reed. Ed Reed intimidated him. He couldn't quite figure out where he was. He's always looking for him on the field. You talk to Tom Brady, and he'll say, I always had to find where Ed Reed was on the field. That's a guy who's had an impact. I know the same from the Chargers. When I talk to them, they go, look for Steve Atwater. I want to see where he is because it tells me where I'm going. It's away from him. But there were other players at that position the same way. And interceptions has something to do with it. Tackles has something to do with it. It's the overall package. And honestly, the eye test has something to do with it. But to me, it's just simply the impact of the game. I don't really need to see numbers. Somebody a couple of years ago, I guess it was 4 years ago, and Ray Guy's name came up as a senior candidate, was talking about his numbers. And I said, I don't need to see his numbers.
Yeah.
I saw Ray Guy play. There was no better punter in the game. Let's get this guy in and just move forward. I mean, he was on the 75th anniversary team, voted on by us. He must have been pretty good. So let's put him in. And feel the same way here. Listen, Steve Atwater, Leroy Butler were first team all decade from the 1990s. They must have had an impact. So why are we waiting to get them into that room? Let's get them in the room. And we got Steve in 1 year, 2 years ago, 2016, but the class of 2016. Let's get him in again and talk about the candidacy. Same thing with Leroy Butler. Let's find out what you like and don't like. But to me, that's the very least we can do.
Well said. Chatting here with Clark Judge. You can find him on Twitter at ClarkJudgeTOF from Talk of Fame Network. I want to talk about current NFL just for a moment here, and we've had some surprising teams this year, you know, coming out. Now, some of them you maybe have been able to see coming for a while, like Jacksonville or the Rams, and saying, hey, look, they've been drafting pretty well or they've been adding the right free agents. But yet at the same time, you do have to take stock in the fact that they did take that leap this year. Are you surprised about some of these teams that have made that leap, including even the Philadelphia Eagles? Or is this a bit, like I sort of laid out, a bit of just sort of a long time coming and eventually it had to happen?
No, I'm surprised. I mean, honestly, with Jacksonville, I didn't think it would ever happen. And then Tom Coughlin goes down there. I do think he's had an impact on that club. They've taken on his personality. They run the ball effectively. They're playing defense effectively. They've able to overcome the shortcomings of the quarterback, and lately he's been playing pretty well. Not last week he didn't play very well.
Right.
But I think they have been a real shocker to me. I didn't think that would happen. But honestly, in all fairness, I mean, that division's weak. That's not to say, you know, well, you know, it takes away from what they've done. They've done very well. You have to take advantage of that. They have. But the Rams, I never saw that coming. I looked at Goff last year, and I wasn't sure what they had in him. Gurley didn't have a good year last year, but they made a couple of key additions. And it wasn't with the weapons. It was inside. I mean, on the offensive line. Andrew Whitworth, at left tackle, mm-hmm. huge addition. Then getting John Sullivan at center, I think he did for them what the center did for Atlanta last year. I mean, they solidified the interior line. And you do that, and you suddenly get some returns from the quarterback and give him a chance. And listen, they changed the coaching staff. Certainly Sean McVay has done a great job there. But I look at Goff, Gurley, what they've done, and I say it's got to be more than just Sean McVay. And it is. I think some of the acquisitions they've made, certainly getting Sammy Watkins on the outside, Woods, yeah, but those are playmakers that he needs. But he's taken a markedly huge step forward. And same thing with Todd Gurley, because I think of the additions on the offensive line, and they're a much better team. They score points in bunches. They've got a guy who understands them, Sean McVay, a guy who can get that ball up and down the field. That, to me, is a real shocker. I didn't see them catching Seattle in that division. Of course, Seattle's gotten a number of injuries, especially on defense. Sherman, Chancellor, Averill, they're all down. And Russell Wilson somehow is carrying that team. And they may not make it to the playoffs, but what he's done is remarkable. But I didn't see them leapfrogging them to the top. I think it's a terrific job what Sean McVay has done. And honestly, I think he probably has the inside edge on Coach of the Year. And you mentioned Philadelphia. I mean, Philadelphia's in a very difficult division, but it turned out this year it really wasn't. That the Giants went absolutely backwards mm-hmm. and bottomed out. The Cowboys had the Zeke Elliott suspension, didn't play very well when he was gone. 3-3, they come back, and all of a sudden, you know, Dak Prescott wasn't very good last week. So they're out of it. But forget it. They played well. The Eagles deserve what they've got, and that's home field advantage to me. Right now, that Coach of the Year is probably a two-headed race with Peterson and with McVay. And then on the outside, I mean, we haven't mentioned the Saints, but Sean Payton's done a great job in New Orleans. And that's the most competitive division out there. But he's done a great job. He should get some votes as well, and Doug Marone as well in Jacksonville.
To go back to the Hall of Fame for a moment, you've been involved with the Contributors Committee, and, of course, Pat Bowlen has kind of been in the mix there. What do you think the chances are of Pat Bowlen being a nominee out of the Contributors Committee in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I was in there this year and was in with a vote this year, and I'm going to tell you right now, his chances are very, very good. I mean, that's probably even soft-selling it. His chances are very good. And next year we have two guys coming out. Every other year it goes 2-1, 2-1. We've got two coming out next year. Of course, this year it's Bobby Bethard, and I say this year, it's 2018, actually, so it's next year, but we've already voted on that. And so when the Contributor Committee gets together next, probably in August, and comes out with two candidates, honestly, I would expect that Pat Bowlen would be one of them.
Again, we're talking here with Clark Judge. You can reach him on Twitter at Clark Judge, TOF. He's a writer and host of the Talk of Fame Network. You can also catch him at talkoffamenetwork.com. Clark, last question for me. Now, which person have you interviewed on your Talk of Fame Sports Network that provided the most memorable interview for you?
Ooh, boy, we've had some good ones. We had Namath, Montana. I would say probably, and you would understand this, Brett Favre. We had Brett Favre on for 40 minutes. We had him on for 40 minutes. We couldn't stop him from talking, and he was hysterical. And the stories were great. And then I had asked him at one point, I said, do you remember your first NFL pass? Because I do. And he said, yeah, I do. And I said, you know who caught it? And he said, yeah, I do. It was me. The ball was deflected, and he caught it. And then he goes, are any of you guys surprised? You've seen me play. Anyone surprised I caught my own pass? And we couldn't stop laughing, but it's just story after story. And if you're around him, I don't care whether it's football or anything else you're talking about, he's got a charismatic personality, and you can't get enough stories. He's a great storyteller. But there are others. Drew Pearson, we had him on after, you know, his draft performance this year when he stood up at the draft and said, yeah, come on, how about those Cowboys? And people in Philadelphia booing and everything. And he was great. And he also made a great case for himself. And I will take this advantage of this opportunity to say, there's another guy I don't get. First team all decade, 1970s wide receiver. Guys are bent out of shape about Terrell Owens or Randy Moss. And, you know, Owens is in his third year of candidacy. Moss is in his first year of candidacy. Why can't we get these guys in? Drew Pearson said, listen, you know, Terrell Owens, I've been waiting 30 years. Wow. I was first team all decade. What did I do to get ignored? He's never been a semifinalist. Never been a finalist. Never been discussed. And I look at that and go, I don't know. Because I remember Drew Pearson. Yeah. I covered some of those games. He was a great receiver, and he made big catches. And you talk about impacts on games, he made an impact. Unfortunately, you guys will probably understand this, with the numbers that are being produced today in the game and by wide receivers, and I think a lot of them are inflated numbers. Some people say phony numbers. Well, I mean, they're inflated numbers. So you have guys with 100-catch seasons. Drew Pearson's numbers don't really equate with some of those that you're looking at today because it was a different era. The game was played differently. But you talk about an impact, that guy had an impact, and he played on championship teams and was a great, great player. How is he not in the Hall of Fame? And now that's up to the senior committee to try to get him forward. And Steve, I hope you don't get into the senior committee.
Here,
I hope
man.
We get you out of here before then, because you get in the senior, you get in the senior list, and you're lost, because there are dozens of guys waiting to get called out of there.
Huge pool, I agree.
Really well said. Last thing I have for you here, Clark, really do appreciate your time. We were just discussing the Broncos quarterback, and you know, there's a lot that they're going to be evaluating there. There's a lot of decisions that they have to make. Where would you like to see them go? Because, again, the philosophy of, hey, can you maybe go get a free agent and you throw a lot of money there, or maybe they go back to trying to, you know, get a guy in the first round and develop. Where would you like to see the Broncos go at quarterback?
Well, I think there's some good quarterbacks out there in this draft. There should be. I don't know if they can get up there and get one because, listen, I live in the New York area. The Giants have got to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to see them move up and get a good young quarterback, because honestly, when you have three quarterbacks, you've got none, and they've got three. And honestly, I've watched them. Paxton Lynch, I thought, might be something, but the fact that he really can't get on the field and has been hurt, and then when he gets on the field, he's okay. I mean, he's nothing more than adequate. Tells me that there's just nothing there. I'd like to see them go in that direction. If that's impossible, and it might be, yeah, you start looking at, maybe you look at a veteran who can come in there and hold it together until you can get a good young quarterback. But John Elway's smart enough to figure that out, and he played that position. He played with Steve Atwater, and they won championships. But honestly, right now, you've got to get somebody who can move that ball up and down the field, and that's not exactly telling anything that you guys don't know. You certainly know that, but I always believe, because I covered the 49ers in the 90s and the Chargers before them, but when I was covering the 49ers, remember Bill Walsh saying, the answers are always in the draft. They're always in the draft. You don't build through free agency. You supplement. You build through the draft. And if you're looking for a quarterback, that's where you start. And that's where the 49ers found Montana. They got, obviously, Jeff Garcia through free agency, but through luck. But with Steve Young, I mean, they got him from Tampa, but that was lucky too. It was before free agency. But you've got to get good young quarterbacks that way. And I look at what Houston's done, and you go, well, why were they in the mess they were? Because they didn't have a quarterback until they got Deshaun Watson. And then you look at Cleveland and say, what's missing there? A quarterback. They passed on Goff. They passed on Wentz. They passed on Watson. I mean, at some point, you've got to figure it out. Someone in this building has to know what a quarterback looks like. And if you don't have that person in the building, you better find him. And you've got that person on John Elway. You just simply got to find him.
That being said, is this a good year to go quarterback shopping based on the names that are already out there and some of the names that could be out there depending on who decides to turn pro?
Yeah, I think it is. And I will tell you also, there's sort of a cautionary tale here, which is you don't have to get one of the top three, four picks, five picks. And you look at Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, where the Patriots got him. You look at where they found Tom Brady. I realize those are, you might say, aberrations, but they're really not. Joe Montana, you see where he was gotten in the third round. You look at where some of these guys are chosen. They don't have to be the first or second pick of the draft. There's so many guys that we know of who've been the first or second pick of the draft who've been disasters. There's a lot of pressure on guys to come out and do something there. But you can find guys if you're looking for you've got the right person looking for the right sorts of things. And again, as I said, John Elway knows what he's looking for. I would sure hope that he would find something. If not in the first round, second, third, fourth round, something like that, because you can find that guy. But he can't and probably doesn't play immediately. You see what's going on with Deshaun Kizer right now in Cleveland. I mean, he's struggling, but he's on the field. Now, is he the answer? I don't know. but he was a second-round draft pick. And one thing I'll tell you that I like what they're doing, they're leaving him on the field. Now, they had him on the field. They took him off, put him on, took him off. You can't do that. To me, if you put a rookie out there, let him take his lumps and let him learn. We know what happened with Elway his first year. He had 7 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. I was out in San Diego when he lined up behind guard. But you let him take their lumps, you know. And Troy Aikman, 0-11 his first year. You let him take their lumps. Eli Manning's first year, he had a Blutarski in Buffalo, 0.0 quarterback rating. And yet he came out of it. So you put him on the field, let him go. But you can find them in the second and third and fourth round. You can find them. School like running back. But you have to know what you're looking for.
Great Animal House reference there, Clark. We really do appreciate it.
Hey, you guys remembered it.
Absolutely. Oh,
yeah. You know what college that was based on, by the way? You know what college it was based on? Based on my alma mater. It was Dartmouth College.
Okay. So I know it was shot at Oregon, but I knew it wasn't based on Oregon. Yeah.
Yeah, it was shot in Oregon, but it's based on AD, Alpha Delta Fraternity at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire.
Incredible. Hey, Clark, amazing stuff. Really great insight. Thank you so much for the time. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Clark. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Best of luck to you, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, there he goes. That is Clark Judge. You can find him on Twitter at Clark Judge TOF.
Do you know what the slogan of Faber College in Animal House was?
I can't remember right now.
Knowledge is good.
Yeah.
Thanks to Clark for joining us. And
Great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure we'll have him on again at some point in the offseason, probably some more Hall of Fame discussion. And we like having Hall of Fame voters on our show, in part because we can kind of put the squeeze on them with Steve Atwater. Because, hey, you got Steve right here.
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, and that's kind of how, you know, we started out the conversation. You know, hey, you're talking to Steve right now. What are your thoughts? And we've done that with multiple guys. You know, we've also, you know, had them on usually to preview other teams and so on and so forth. But, I mean, that's part of the politicking of this. It's important. It's an important part of the process. It seems like the merits of your play probably should speak loud enough. And trust us, we feel that way about Steve. But on the same time, there have been many, many deserving candidates that are still not in or that have waited a long time. So for Steve, you know, we of course, believe in Steve. He's not only our partner on the radio, but we are also, you know, I grew up watching him. We think he's more than earned that opportunity. But part of this is bringing on these guys and having that conversation. Why hasn't it happened? Mm-hmm. Why are there such a lack of safeties in this position? So it was great stuff there from Clark.
These are things that we've discussed. I know if you follow me on Twitter, you've heard me discuss these things for quite a few years. And one of the things I enjoy about this forum on the radio and in the podcast is that we're able to take a more active role, and especially having Steve, it's really take that to the next level. So I have personally enjoyed that. Obviously, I'm not in the Hall of Fame selection room, but I feel like we can still kind of start twisting some arms a little bit. And hopefully we
can sound like the mob there for a moment.
Yeah. I'm not breaking thumbs or anything.
No.
I mean, but we just want to make our point known.
Not twisting arms to break arms.
No.
We're just twisting arms to gently nudge.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to inform people. a reminder, like the safety thing is a big deal to me, and it's a big deal beyond Steve Atwater.
And so far, we haven't had to threaten anybody, so that separates us from the mob.
But I'm kind of like I noted when I spoke to Clark on our call there. Hey, you got Kenny Easley in. That was great. That's a good sign. But look at all these other safeties.
And he agreed.
Yes. And that's the thing. When I bring it up, they usually agree.
Yeah.
But it's something that needs to be done. One thing we didn't have a chance to get to, and I was going to bring it up to him, and maybe if we have Clark on again, I will bring this up. My idea of the once-a-decade expanded class. The 17-person class. 17, of course, was the original Hall of Fame class. I'd like to see a 17-person class for 2019, which is going to be the NFL's 100th season. And that seems to me every 10 years or so to, you won't get everybody in, but you can at least ease the backlog. This is something that I want to see. And as we have other Hall of Fame voters on, it's something that I'm going to bring up. I know I've talked about with Jim Saccomano. I know he's even brought that idea to people in the Hall of Fame. So maybe we can get some traction on that bright idea I had. And because it's not just Broncos we're talking about. There are other guys from other teams that are waiting that I'll get on the table for. We had Brian Mitchell on last week, and I would get on the table for Brian Mitchell to be in the Hall of Fame because over the long term, he's one of the greatest returners of all time. Only Jerry Rice has more all-purpose yards in league history, and yet he can't get a sniff. And remember Leslie O'Neal? We talked talked about, you heard about his name mentioned. He hasn't gotten a sniff. And then from the Broncos' perspective, Dan Reeves, the other coaches that lost four Super Bowls and didn't win one are in the Hall of Fame, Bud Grant and Marv Levy, but Dan Reeves is not. So plenty to talk about there. Thanks to Clark Judge. Thanks, of course, to Steve Atwater. Had some questions there, our co-host. Ryan Edwards, appreciate you sitting in with me.
Enjoyed it.
I'm Andrew Mason. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you in 2018 on the Horsin' Around podcast.